Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Heart-Centered Living and Loving. This is your host, Jim Brown, and today is Tuesday, February 12th, 2013. And today, we are going to be celebrating Valentine's Day on this show. The chat room is open. I played some opening music, but I didn't hear it over my earphone, so I'm not sure if you heard it or not. Feel free to email your comments and questions to me either in the chat room or at jim@jimbrownspeaker.com. And my books, Speaking Topics, Life Coaching, are on my website, which is jimbrownspeaker.com. As I mentioned, each week I'm going to be speaking on the Coral Princess, which is going from Los Angeles through the Panama Canal to Fort Lauderdale, April 20th through May 4th, and then again on the Star Princess, October 6th through the 21st, and that's from Los Angeles to Hawaii and back to Los Angeles. And those of you who have seen me speak on a ship before, I'd love to see you again. Those who haven't, a great excuse for us to get together. Okay, you are safe. No harm will come to you in this space. My goal each week is to bring you more love, happiness, joy, compassion, and abundance into your life. I'm going to ask you that each week when you listen to the show, listen with one goal, and that is to get one thing out of the show and implement it into your daily life. In preparing for today's show, I realized I had a ton of material I wanted to cover, and 60 minutes wasn't going to be long enough. So the show is scheduled to go 90 minutes until 3:30 Pacific time. But if we finish before then we'll just end the show. Grab a piece of paper if it's near to you so you can jot down the qualities that resonate with you, because today's show is going to be about what heart-centered love is and what heart-centered love isn't. And I've got a list of 40 items that heart-centered love is and 20 that it isn't. Susan Shepherd's out there, but in 1988, we went to three Tony Robbins programs together. And one of the things that he said was that when you look at your life and look back at your life, all it is a series of memories. So I decided that I was going to create a memory for my wife, Rosemarie. And that'll be 25 years ago this summer. So it was for our 21st anniversary. And as I've mentioned, Rosemarie is a hospital pharmacist, and those of you who are of that type know that they're very detail-oriented, whether it's a pharmacist or an engineer or just science in general is very, very that kind of personality type. And she was supposed to be off. We were going to go away for the weekend. Our anniversary is August 27th. And she was supposed to be off on Friday, and I figured, well, we'll just get up in the morning and pack, and it'll be a surprise. And then Thursday night she says, oh, I'm working tomorrow. So she gets up and she goes to work on Friday, and I open the closet, and I have no idea what to pack. So she had some gifts wrapped for me for our anniversary, so I knew to take those. I took some clothes. Oh, and then it came time to pack our toiletries. I've been married for 21 years at the time, but I had no clue of what she used, so I just took it all. So when it came time to pack her jewelry, I figured, well, we'll just take all that too. And then I stopped and got rented, this is in 1988, I rented a video camera. And I stopped and I picked up 24 yellow roses. And I had made arrangements, she was scheduled to work that weekend to have her off. So I get to the hospital and Nomi pages her and she doesn't answer the page. And finally Nomi gets a hold of her and Nomi says, well, they call her Rose. Rose, I have a date for lunch. And my wife says, well, Nomi, you don't date. Well, finally my wife comes down. I give her 24 yellow roses and I say, I'm kidnapping you for the weekend. And she says, I can't go to lunch. I'm busy. I said, no, we're going away for the weekend. Well, we drove down to La Costa outside of San Diego, which is 125 miles from the hospital. And if you know my wife, like me, she's a very talkative person. She didn't say a word the whole way down. We get to La Costa, which at the time was listed as Lifestyle of the Rich and Famous as one of the 10 best resorts in the world. We get there, we get into the room, and she says, this room is moldy. It smells. And she starts unpacking her clothes, and she says, where did you find this stuff, these clothes? I haven't worn these clothes in 10 years. Well, I planned this for 6 months, and about this time my mind is going, you know, this isn't exactly the way I thought it was going to work out. And I said, well, put this on. She said, where are we going? I said, well, doesn't matter. You won't like it anyhow. So this, you know, this wasn't moving the way I wanted it to. So we get off the exit at the Santa Anita racetrack, and she thinks we're going there. And I turn the opposite direction, not Santa Anita, the one down in San Diego. And she wouldn't go into the restaurant. So we wait outside the restaurant until all the other people come. We get in the car, and it takes us out to a field with 18 hot air balloons. And something about the color of those hot air balloons being blown up just dissipated all her anger and upset. So we go up in a hot air balloon, and we're over the Pacific Ocean, and there's a gorgeous sunset, and there's a full harvest moon. And I give her, and I have the video camera there, I give her a gift. And she said, well, can it wait until we get down? I said, no. She opens the card, and it's a love card, and it's about teddy bears. And then there's a box, and inside the box is a teddy bear. And she notices that there's a ribbon on the zipper for the teddy bear. And she unzips it, and inside is a heart-shaped diamond. And that was it. It just, the whole thing, it was an experience that she'll remember the rest of her life. And Rosemary is the kind of person that doesn't share things with other people. And to this day, at the hospital, people know that story. The rest of the weekend went perfectly, went beautifully. The next time I surprised her was for her 50th birthday, and all I had to do then was to tell her what time to be ready and what to wear. She didn't ask any questions. She'd gotten over that, what do you want to call it, fear or the thing of being surprised. But the point of the story is that life is a series of memories. And what better can we do than to create a memory for somebody we love, whatever that memory happens to be? And we see that many times on television where somebody who's in a war zone in Afghanistan or if it was in Iraq, and the soldier comes home and walks into his 6 or 7 or 8 year old son or daughter's classroom and surprises them. That's a memory that child will carry for the rest of their life. So we're going to celebrate Valentine's Day. And St. Valentine's Day began as a liturgical celebration of a saint that was named Valentinus. And the most popular story associated with St. Valentine was that he was imprisoned for performing weddings for soldiers who were forbidden to marry and for ministering to Christians who at the time were being persecuted under the Roman Empire. And during his imprisonment, he is said to have healed the daughter of the jailer. Legend states that before his execution, he wrote, "From your Valentine, as a farewell to her." Now, Valentine's Day, Dorothy at the gym was saying, well, you know, she doesn't have a partner, so Valentine's Day, you know, doesn't have any meaning to her. And granted, Valentine's Day is a couple's day. And that's what we celebrate on Thursday, is the love of couples. But at the same time, it's a holiday, a day we celebrate for everybody. I remember as a little kid making Valentine's Day and giving them out at school. So Valentine's Day is really a day that we celebrate love. And the interesting thing is that in English, we only have one word for love. And and that word usually refers to lust. Yet the Greeks have four words for love. In other words, our word for love is when we're in love, we're in that oh my God stage. So here's the four words that the Greeks have for love. The first one is agape, which means love, and it's used in a term called agapo, which means I love you. And agape is used in ancient texts to denote feelings for one's children and the feelings you have for your spouse. And the second word they have is eros. And eros is a passionate love with sensual desire and longing. Third one is philia, which means friendship or affectionate love in modern Greek. It's a dispassionate, virtuous love, a concept that was developed by Aristotle. And it includes loyalty to friends, family, and community. And the last one is called storge, S-T-O-R-G-E, and it means affection in ancient and modern Greek. It's natural affection like that felt by parents for their offspring. And it's often known to express mere acceptance or putting up with situations as in loving the tyrant. Let's talk about some of the different things that I think we should aspire to have in our heart-centered loving. Now, I'll repeat the thing that I say to everybody, and that is, two things. One is, all I have is a point of view, and two is to be true to yourself. So let me start by making a disclaimer. And you go, ha ha, he's going to make a disclaimer before he talks about heart-centered love. The disclaimer is this. I subscribe to 100% of everything I say here, and at the same time, I'm still working to master these traits in my life. And it's been a lot of fun to put this together for today's show, because it brings it front and center for me, and it makes it more focused on what it is that I want, and my key relationship in my life is Rosemarie. From my point of view, the reason we came to Earth is to come to school, and the difference between the school you and I went to when we were growing up and the one called Earth School is that Earth School, you don't get weekends off, you don't get summer vacation, you don't get winter vacation. You're here from the day of your first breath to the day of your last breath, and we're here to learn lessons. And I'll do a whole program on that later on. But to me, the most important lesson we came here to learn is how to love. And we've talked about learning to love ourselves and a relationship with ourselves and with others, which is what we're going to move on to. So it's easy to love somebody else when they love us back. The challenge is when they believe that they aren't good enough to be loved, and by treating us harshly, they get to prove themselves right. So I just want to share with you a couple sentences from my book. And it says, it's easy to love somebody when he or she loves you back. The challenge is when others are angry, hostile, belligerent, or arrogant. What if they don't love themselves and they believe that they didn't deserve to be loved? What if they behave so poorly that it would be nearly impossible for you to love them? Then in their mind, when you don't love them, they're right. They don't deserve to be loved. Just food for thought. When our oldest son was 19, he created all kinds of angst for me. And I was talking to a woman I had worked with, and I was telling her, sometimes you get so frustrated, you just wish he was dead. And she stopped me. We were going into the Holiday Inn in Glendale because she was coming from San Francisco. And she stopped me right there in the parking lot. And she said, Jim, let me tell you the story of our son. He was 15 years old, and we lived in Alexandria, Virginia. And he was on drugs. And we moved from Alexandria to San Francisco. We put him in a drug rehab program, and he got off drugs. But he hated San Francisco. So he moved back to Alexandria and lived with my sister. And he was 17 at the time. And they went to a party, and on the way, they would have been drinking, and on the way home, his friends dared him to walk across a beam. As he was walking across the beam, he fell. And the beam was over an electrical substation. And she said, just see your son laying in that casket, stone cold dead. And then no matter what, just love him. And that's our challenge, is to love people when they make it hard for us to love them. Love is a gift. And we know when we give a gift is given as something from my heart to your heart. I give you this gift. What you do with it, how you receive it, when you open it, how you use it, is up to you. A Course in Miracles tells us that we're either giving love or asking for love. We ask for love by being fearful, by being angry, by being resentful, by being withholding. There's all kinds of ways we say, hey, please love me. We don't have the courage to say, hey, please love me. I'm having a hard time loving myself. One of the things that I love as an exercise that I tell people when we go to a wedding or that are getting married is to tell your spouse or whoever you love every single day, what I love about you is. And then you fill it in. Because when we're in love, we see what we love about the person. We see only the things we love about that person. Then something happens, and they call it marriage, and we go from wearing rose-colored sunglasses to black sunglasses, and he does this wrong, and she does that wrong, and all that type of thing. So when you focus on what I love about you is, it causes you all day to be looking for and thinking about what you love about that person. And the reality is, in life, whether we're talking about love or whatever it is we're talking about, whatever we look for is what we find. We look for the good in a person, we find the good in a person. We look for the bad in a person, we find the bad in a person. So what do you want your life to be? You want a life of happiness? You want a life of love? You want a life of joy? Then look for it. Look for it everywhere you go. Look for it in every person you see. Next thing is accepting each other just the way we both are. We all have our unique values and beliefs, and we have a tendency to think that others should see life the way we do, especially when we're right and they're wrong. I don't happen to believe there's any such thing as right or wrong, but we have a tendency to do that, to say this is right, that's wrong. We learn to accept ourselves the way we are, and then we need to accept the other person the way he or she is. The next one, then, is to be loyal. Now, Rosemary and I don't see things the same way very often. And if she listened to this or if she was sitting next to me, she would say, that's not so. So I say A, she says B. What we do love together is we love to cruise, we love to go to musical plays, and we love to the classical music concerts. But what we have after almost 46 years is a deep, lifelong sense of loyalty to our marriage and to each other. And no matter what, that's there. Our life is committed to this relationship. And the concept of us not being married just isn't part of our relationship. It is who we are. It is what we're about. And no matter what, we're together. We're loyal to each other. We'll take care of each other. We'll get through everything that life sends our way. And that's a challenge for each of us, to have that sense of loyalty and not to just say, that's it, I'm out of here. And I see that a lot, and they go, I don't quite get it, why it is that people say, I don't like you, I don't like what you said, I don't like what you did, let's get divorced, I'm out of here, whatever it happens to be. We're people. We're all people. We're all works of art in progress. We're all working on expressing ourselves as divine beings. We're all working on opening up to ourselves, loving ourselves, and expanding that love. So we have to look at people and look at each other as somebody that I brought into my life to teach me something. And that's what's the most important thing, is to recognize that that person who you're maybe having problems with is there to teach you. What are they here to teach you? This is your life. You're Steven Spielberg. You're directing the movie called Your Life. What is he or she, what did you bring him or her into your life to teach you? The next thing is compromise. And we don't see this in our federal government in the United States. It's like, no, my way, no, my way. Those of us who aren't there realize and accept that what life is an ever ongoing compromise. We never get what we want. I remember when I was a little kid, I was too old for this, too young for that. Too old for this, too young for that. No matter what age I was, it always seemed like I was too old for this or too young for that. Every situation that we're in is either a win-win situation or a lose-lose situation. In my opinion, there is no such thing as a win-lose situation, because a win-lose situation means I win, you lose. If I win and you lose, or you win and I lose, that converts to a lose-lose situation. So let's just say for the sake of this discussion that you win and I lose. So what do? I get angry, I get upset, I go inside, and I put a brick down between you and me. And then the next time it happens, we put another brick, another brick, another brick. And pretty soon, we've built a relationship that has a brick wall between the two of us. Because you win, I lose. There is no such thing as win-lose. It's always win-win or lose-lose. So compromise means, how can we come to an agreement that we both feel that we win? And we need to talk about that. What does it mean to win? What do I want? What makes me happy? What makes you happy? It's not like, no, I have to be happy. This little card I have on my desk has three sayings. I don't remember where I got it from. Doesn't matter. Do I want to be happy or do I want to be right? I know that one comes from A Course in Miracles. Can I be happy blaming and making another person wrong and myself right? And the last one says, do I want to experience peace or do I want to experience conflict? Your choice. What do you want to experience in your life? I'm up to number 9. Holy cow. I thought an hour and a half would be enough. Tolerating. We need to be able to tolerate our own mistakes. We need to be able to tolerate the other person's shortcomings or the other person's mistakes. It just is. We get too vested in, you know, I'm in charge and you need to do it this way and or that way. And just be more tolerant of life. Life is so precious. I went to a memorial service on Saturday for Diane, who is a friend, Kirk's sister, and it was a little bitty chapel, only 5 minutes from here, and she was part of that church, and it seems like everybody from the church was there, and they all stood up and said how loving she was. I had never met her. I'd just known her from Kirk, and I had sent her emails. She had liver cancer, and I sent her emails every day for about 6 months. And it was just so heartwarming to hear all the things that these people had to say about her. And then Kirk got up last, and he talked about his sister, and he said, don't wait. And I agree with that 100%. You know, we don't know how long our life is going to be. And we have a tendency to be intolerant of what goes on in our life or in other people's lives. And the amazing thing about death is that we can let go of all that stuff when a person dies. And we can just think about and remember the good stuff. So let's do that when we're alive. Let's tolerate people's shortcomings, because we all have shortcomings. We all have idiosyncrasies. So let's not focus on that stuff. Let's just enjoy it. The 10th one I have here is admiring. And my focus, and I've told Rosemary, I said, you better listen to these shows because I talk about you all the time, and she just laughs and says, I know. She's an amazing woman. She graduated from pharmacy school in 1963. So in a few months, she'll celebrate 50 years as a clinical hospital pharmacist. Now, when she graduated from pharmacy school, she got paid $1 an hour less than her male classmates because they said you can get pregnant, married, and have children. In that order. And here we are 50 years later. Two years ago, she started at $3 an hour, and she got a $5.50 an hour raise. So she was 50 cents short of getting a raise that was twice as much money as she started at. And she's just an amazing woman. She has, those of you who know me and know her, she has lupus. She's had lupus since 1995. And it seems like there's always some kind of ache or pain or something that's going wrong, whereas myself, I've been gifted with extraordinary health. And she keeps going. She still works full-time. She loves working full-time. We get to do 2 or 3 cruises a year. And I just, not only do I love her, but I admire what she's accomplished in her professional life, as well as admire that she's been my wife for all these years. And it's like she's one of these, what are the commercials about? The Energizer Bunny, she keeps on going. Or the Timex watch, she takes a licking and keeps on ticking. So I think it's really important to admire the person that you love. The next thing would be to compliment each other. And this is kind of like the one I talked about earlier, saying what I love about you is, and Rosemary is wonderful at that. She compliments me, oh, you look nice in this outfit and nice in that outfit. However, sometimes that's a trap, because she'll say, well, how do I look in this outfit? She got a pair of shoes. She said, do you like the shoes? And I don't care, they're shoes. I haven't bought a pair of shoes in 10 or 15 years. But so with the compliment thing, what I want to say is many times, and I'm assuming, and I don't know who you are out there and where you are in the world, but I'm assuming that like the spiritual conferences that I go to, About 90% of the people in the audience are women, so I'm assuming that this is probably about the same ratio, that about 90% of you are women. And you don't do a great job at receiving compliments. So when somebody gives you a compliment, be gracious about it and graciously accept the compliment. One of the ones I love is when you tell a woman how pretty that dress is. And she says, oh, that old thing? Be gracious. I learned to be gracious about accepting compliments as a speaker, because people would come up afterward and say how much they enjoyed it, how much it meant to them, etc. And what I learned to say is, thank you, I really appreciate you sharing that with me. And the funny thing is, I'm probably close to 100% extrovert. And when I'm in an audience, I sit there and formulate a question, and I spend half of the program trying to think of a question. When I'm up in front of an audience, it's my show. And so my point is that I get nervous about going up to the speaker afterwards and talking to him or her. Yet when I'm up there, I don't think a thing of it. So I can imagine how hard it is for people to come up and to say that and to compliment somebody. But what are we talking about here? We're talking about you feeling better about yourself and helping somebody else feel better about themselves. Compliment, compliment, compliment. You know, I wrote these down, and they aren't in any particular order. The next one I have, which we're down to number 12, is clear communication. Speak not to be misunderstood. Okay? I don't know about you, but I know I say things, and the things I say, I mumble. They go from my head to my mouth. I'm not listening to what I'm saying. I'm not articulating what I'm saying. I'm not paying attention because my brain works faster than my head, and I'm moving into something else. Communication is my responsibility. When I sit here on the show, it's my responsibility to communicate clearly with you so that you understand, so that you don't misunderstand what I'm saying. What we're talking about today is what I'm calling heart-centered love. We live in a society that moves so fast and changes so fast, and we don't have time for this or that, whether it's our children, whether it's our husband, our wife. It's constantly go, go, go. And we don't focus on love. And when we sit down and say, okay, what is life about? I'm going to stick my neck out here and I'm going to say, from my point of view, life is only about one thing. It is about love. It is about learning how to love. And what happens is we're given all kinds of circumstances that say, here, try and love in this situation. Try and love in that situation. Challenge is to love. So in order to love, we have to be true to ourselves. And what stops us from doing that? Every single one of us, and I know this is further on, but it doesn't matter. Every single one of us has had our heart broken. And the pain of having a broken heart becomes so intense that we shut the heart down and we don't allow people in. And why don't we allow them in? Well, there's a couple reasons. One is, I don't trust myself. I was vulnerable. I let you in and you hurt me. You abused the trust I gave you. I gave you a gift of my open, pure heart. And you slammed it. And you hurt it. And the pain is so intense, I don't want to ever let anybody else in. And we change and we protect our heart from that. So we keep people at a distance. Then we're missing out on life. Does it hurt? You bet it hurts. Have we all been hurt? You bet we have. Everybody had a broken heart. at some time in her life? Absolutely yes. So what are we here to do? We're here to heal the pain of a broken heart. We're here to become whole again. We're here to love after we've had a broken heart. It's just like a broken arm or leg. You put it in a cast, it heals, it mends, you get up, you get going, and it becomes stronger than ever before. Please, I don't care what's happened to you in your past, heal the pain of a broken heart. And know that the only reason that you're alive is to learn how to love. Love again. Love no matter what's happened. Whether you've lost a husband or wife from death, divorce, son, daughter, whoever. However that's happened. Just learn to love. We're here to take care of each other. We're here to help each other heal. That's my goal here, is to help you heal from the pain of whatever's going on in your life and to be able to move forward from a place of, hey, I'm going to love. I can trust myself. I have intuition. I know when I follow my intuition, I'm good. And I know when I don't follow my intuition, I get in trouble. So I'll follow my intuition. I'll trust myself. And there's times when we know that we should have said no, and we didn't, and we got hurt. So we got to pay more attention. We got to have that barometer out there. As Linnell would say, you got to have your truth meter. Constantly got to be checking your truth meter. How does this feel? Is this good? Does this work? So back on here, we were talking about clear communication, and I was saying that we should speak not to be misunderstood. And when I'm speaking, the communication is my responsibility. Again, I'm going to reiterate this. I said it earlier. Look for what I love about another person. I literally have a pair of rose-colored sunglasses. Go buy a pair of rose-colored sunglasses. Does it sound hokey? You bet it does. But find those rose-colored sunglasses and put them on and look at life through rose-colored sunglasses. There's a character in a movie, and it's called Pollyanna. And the people say, oh, that's so Pollyanna. Well, fooey. I'm a Pollyanna. And I don't care what's going on in the world. What's going on in the world has nothing to do with me. I can't change what's going on in the world, but I can take care of my world. And I don't care what evidence is out there. I'm going to learn to love and love bigger and love better and love more and be more outrageous in sharing with people how important it is to love. Nothing else matters, and everything else falls in place. When we learn how to love, we've spent the first 5 weeks talking about loving ourselves, forgiving ourselves. We're talking about what love is in relationship today. And then we'll go on to forgiving other people, and we'll go on to other aspects of relationship with other people. So don't forget, that's your homework. Go get yourself a pair of rose-colored sunglasses. And look at life through those rose-colored glasses. Go out, get those rose-colored glasses, and use them with somebody that is challenging you to love them. And keep asking yourself, well, what do I love about you? What do I love about you? You got to look for it. You keep looking and looking and looking. Nobody is all good. Nobody is all bad. So the challenge is to look, make a concentrated effort to look to find something you love about the person. I guarantee you'll find it. And then when you find it, focus on what you love about this person. This person is challenging you to love them. Don't focus on what irritates you about them. That's not going to do you any good. It's not going to do them any good. It isn't going to do the relationship any good. Many people are control freaks. And the woman who's general resignation as general manager of the Earth, who I'm going to read right now, knows who she is, but I've asked many audiences to give me their written resignation. And here's my favorite one. Official resignation letter as general manager of the world. I, so-and-so, on this day, blah, blah, do hereby officially resign as general manager of the world. I no longer accept any responsibility for anyone else's beliefs, prejudices, etc. My only focus is to love myself and allow the divine to work through and with me. I will identify and eliminate everything that does not lead to that goal. I promise to commit to recognize that a supreme being absolutely, unconditionally loves me, and that I am here for a divine purpose, and that it is safe for me to be me and to express and to be loved. I thought that was awesome. Next one we have is joy. And joy is simply a state of happiness or, I can't read my own writing here. Felicity? Oh, well. Next one is happiness. And when I talk about happiness, so often in our society, people say, well, I'll be happy when I get this job. I'll be happy when I get a raise. I'll be happy when I get married. I'll be happy when I lose 10 pounds. I'll be happy, when this happens, when that happens. And to the extent that we're only happy when certain external things happen, happiness isn't going to happen very often, and happiness is going to be very fleeting. What I'm suggesting is that happiness has to be from within. It's who you are, that you're happy. And you don't need anything to be happening to be happy. Just be happy. Whatever's going on in your life, be happy. And I think the biggest disservice we do in a relationship is to expect our significant other to be the source of our happiness. There is nobody that can make you happy. That's your job. Don't expect another person by what he or she says or does to make you happy. That's your job. It's an inside job. The next one I have here is something that's relatively new for me, and I'm really, really enjoying it, and that's compassion. And I've told you before that I come from a very left-brain background, just to reiterate it for people who are listening for the first time. I would have gotten my bachelor's degree in mathematics if I had it my way. I got an MBA. I have a background in finance and healthcare. I took a hospital through a bankruptcy as a controller. I was the director of budget of a $250 million healthcare corporation. So it was very left brain. And when we raised our children, I told them what to do. I never told them how to do it. I never showed them how to do it. I never told them how much I loved them. I never told them how important and valuable and neat they were. So compassion, when I go, I don't buy clothes from L.L. Bean or a place like that because I have to touch the clothes. We're in a store, and I touch it. I may love the way it looks, but until I touch it, I won't buy it. So compassion to me is touching it. It's feeling. And it's having a feel for people, and it's having an understanding and a sense of, oh, okay, which compassion lacks judgment. And compassion is a feeling that we have for other people. And we all need somebody in our life to be compassionate with us because we all have a whole series of problems that we're having to deal with. So in my life, compassion is something new. It's like a new set of clothes. It's kind of like cashmere. It's so soft. It feels so good. And I really enjoy the bonding that happens with people when you feel compassionate. Nadine, I don't know if you're out there, but this morning we had the last yoga class from this teacher who's been with us for 2 years, and Katina. And in the beginning of class, I just told her how much I appreciated having her the last 2 years as a teacher, and enjoy her, and how much I'm going to miss her. And I said it in front of the whole class. And she said, "Oh, don't do that. You're going to make me cry." Well, I didn't want to make her cry, but I find it enigmatic to me that somebody is, and we're like that. Oh, well, gee, you know, I can't cry. I can't show my emotion. Well, we were having a moment where I wanted to express my gratitude, and I'm going to express my gratitude. And that's what I enjoy about having compassion for people, listening to people, and being there for them. Next one I have, oh my God, I can't believe this. We're halfway through the show and I'm not halfway through. I'm a third of the way through the list. I could speak faster, but then I don't know. Next one is understanding. I don't know what you're thinking, how you're thinking, and I do know that Rosemary thinks that I should be able to read her mind. And we've only been married 45 years, so it's not long enough. We could be married 145 years, and I wouldn't be able to read her mind. Her mind just doesn't work like my mind works. And in a million years, I won't understand how her mind works. The challenge is to understand. And when you say something, I know what that means to me, but it may not mean the same thing to you. So I have a tendency to ask, well, when you say this, what do you mean by that? To get clarification. If I don't understand it, then I need to ask you, please expand on that. Please explain that. Please help me understand that. And don't be afraid of how you look to other people or how they're going to think of you. I told you before that when I first started speaking, my biggest fear was that somebody would have a question and I wouldn't have the answer. And then I ran across Terry Cole Whitaker's book, What You Think of Me Is None of My Business. And that works everywhere in life. What other people think of you is none of your business. Have the courage to be true to yourself. Be yourself. Reach out there and be you. You're the only person God has ever created that he gave the gifts that he gave to you. So be bold. Be brave. Be out there. Be you. Don't be a carbon copy. Don't be a fake. Don't put a mask on. Be yourself. Be authentic. Be genuine. Be loving. Be caring. Next one is to be supportive. We don't have to agree with each other for me to support you. Nobody has ever died from an overdose of love. Remember that. No one has ever died from an overdose of love. Karen Anderson, who I don't see here today, has a daughter-in-law who can't understand how Karen can love her so much and so unconditionally. And that's just the way Karen is. Next one I have here is to listen. And a lot of times, a lot of us listen to look to see if the person is taking a breath and we can start speaking. Or we listen waiting for an entry point to say something. Listen to hear. Listen to hear what's going on, not necessarily through the words. Only 8% of what's communicated is through the words. The rest is through the tonality and the body language. Look at the body language. Look at the eyes. There's a woman at the gym, Pam, and her husband, Ken, and I just have a ball watching her face when they're interacting. And her face is so descriptive. And that's what's fun, is watch it and listen to it. Listen to people. Don't listen to get your point across. Listen to them. Listen to where they're at. Listen between the words. Listen to where the pain is. Listen to what they're asking you. It doesn't always come out through the words. But if you're totally relaxed and your mind isn't thinking about what it wants to say next, you can listen, and listening is an enormous gift of love. 20th one is to be empathetic. And to me, that's just, you know, being sensitive to another person and experiencing their feelings and thoughts about the same time they are. Next one is gratitude. And I want to tell you a story about this one. And it's a friend of mine. His name is W. Mitchell. And he had two blips in the road of life. And the first blip was that he was driving a motorcycle and it got sideswiped by a laundry truck. And it ignited his gas tank. And he got third-degree burns over about 70% of his body. He had 15 skin graft operations. And in one of those operations, they amputated all 10 of his fingers. Then the second blip in the road of life was that he was flying an airplane in Colorado. The plane wasn't properly de-iced. They got to about 150 feet in altitude, and the plane dropped. As you know, airplanes are either flying or they're rocks. It plummeted to the ground. The other three guys in the plane got up, got out. He went to get up. The fall, the impact had severed his spine. What he said was that when he was in the hospital with that second blip, he was focusing on the things he couldn't do. He said, I used to be able to do 10,000 things, and now I could only do 9,000 things. And I was focusing on the 1,000 things that I couldn't do. And then I shifted my focus to what I could do. I was grateful for what I could do. And that's the key, to be grateful for what you have. Here's a challenge, and this is a challenge for me too. Try to see things from other people's point of view. It's real easy to see it from our own point of view, but it's a real challenge to see it from their point of view. Remember, you're the only one that has the values and the beliefs and the experience that you have. So see it from the other person's point of view. And the Native Americans used to say, walk a mile in another person's moccasins. That's the challenge. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play some music for a minute. I'm not anywhere near where I want to be in today's program. So just to give this a little, and Rachel, if you're out there, it's going to be about a minute and 6 seconds. I goofed. I put the music on and I muted myself and I forgot to come back. I'm sorry. Oh no. I hope you're still there. Susan, how come you didn't text me and tell me this? Anyhow, we're talking about dating your spouse, your children, your lover. Go out and do things with each other. And I was saying that Rosemary and I don't do that, but she gets tired. She's got a long day at work. And we need to move on. Oh, man. You know what I'm doing here? I'm criticizing myself for not taking us off of mute. Oh, well, let it go, Jim. Let it go. Okay, next thing I have here is laughing and crying together. I love laughter, And those of you who know me know that I love to laugh and I love to make you laugh. And I think laughing is very important. I think it lifts our spirits. It lightens our load. It just is fun to laugh. And I think we need to cry together, too. When we're hurting, we need to take care of each other. When we're in pain, then we need to share that pain. As somebody at the gym this morning was telling me about her 91-year-old aunt, who she had to take to the hospital, who isn't eating and drinking. And I just quickly shared, I said, hey, if she's ready to die, let her die. Give her the gift of dying. And that's painful. But that's part of life. That's what we're called to do. We have a whole lot more that we can do than we know that we can do. Being intimate. And what I'm talking about here is emotional intimacy, that we have to share what's going on in our life, that we're imperfect human beings and we need to be able to come back and share our fears, our weaknesses, and trust that our mate will hold that gently and be there affectionately for us. We need to be playful. We need to be childlike. And when I say childlike, I think of the biggest crowd I ever spoke in front of was about 1,400 people, and there was a 9 or 10-year-old girl in the audience, and she had the Davy Crockett hat on. And I don't remember what I was talking about, but I went and I got her, and the two of us, we skipped across the whole room. And you can imagine the size that a room has to be to hold 1,400 people. Be childlike. Have fun. Remember, what other people think of you is none of your business. Next thing we talked about last week and we're going to talk about next week is forgive. So I'm not going to say anything more, but heart-centered love is about forgiving. Here comes the hard part. You got to forget. You got to let it go. And the best example I can give of that is a 2-year-old or a toddler. And you can be nasty to them and do whatever to them, and 5 minutes later they're back in your lap, they're hugging you, they're kissing you, they forget about it. It's gone. It's over. Don't hold grudges. Don't hold on to stuff. It isn't worth it. Next thing is that love heals. And I said it earlier that we've all had our hearts broken, and today needs to be the day that you say, that's it. I've had my heart broken. I'm going to heal it. I'm going to make it whole. I'm going to love again. Because there's only one reason I'm here. And that's to love and to continue to give my love. Giving love is like putting oxygen into the air. Without oxygen, we all die. Without love, we all die. We have to love. We have to reach out. And it doesn't matter how many years we've been married. There's another guy at the gym, and his name is Guy. He's 90. And he and his wife have been married 66 years. And that's just amazing. I read in the paper last week where there's a couple, I forgot where they are in the United States, the longest married couple in the United States. He's 101, and she is 97. And they've been married 80 years. So, heal your heart. Don't stonewall the heart off and separate yourself from other people. Reach out. Love empowers. So, love empowers. Empower your children. Empower your husband. Empower your wife. Empower your parents. Empower anybody. Empower everybody. Because they live in a world that says you're a victim. And you give away your power to everybody. Give the power back to people. And when people come up to me and say, hey, wow, you did this or did that, I said, no. I said the words, and you were ready to hear them. And you were ready to do something about it. And that's what it's about, empowering other people. Don't make them dependent upon you. It's like a bird, and you give it. You don't scrunch it in your hand. You open your hand and you let it fly. Love shares. We share our pain, we share our joy, we share our laughter, we share our money, we share our lives, we share everything. And love, I mentioned this before about love always grows. Next thing here, and I'm almost to the end of my list of what love does. Whew. Love minimizes expectations. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that you're not going to have any expectations, but your life will be more fulfilling if you minimize those expectations, because we have values and beliefs and expectations. And based on those values and based on those beliefs and those expectations, those are the only things that can cause us to be disappointed. If I didn't meet your expectations, you're disappointed in me. If you don't have any expectations for me, you just let me be me and love me anyhow, then you can never be disappointed, can you? Just love me the way I am. And I know Susan Moore is in the chat room, and I know she does that. She loves me just the way I am, and that's the kind of person she is. And even though we haven't seen each other in 10 years, love gives love. It does not withhold love. Okay, confession time here. I know that when Rosemary hurts my feelings, I just withdraw and withhold my love. And this is a challenge for me, and this is something that I'm working on and I need to work on, and I need to just continue to love. And I have a little stone that I keep in my jeans. I don't have jeans on right now because the pocket I have, it would fall out of. But that's to remind me to come back to my center. And every one of us has a center. And my center is sacredness. And it's when I'm withholding my love, that's my ego. And I got to recognize that that's my ego and say, uh-uh, you're not in charge here. That part of me that wants peace and love and joy is in charge. That's what my life is about. Peace, love, happiness. Okay, the last thing we have here on what heart-centered love is that we are always changing, constantly changing. So to sustain a dynamic heart-centered love, we must always be working on the relationship. We've talked about that, and I can reiterate it, and I've learned, too, that all of us, or very few of us, learn from the the first time that we hear something. So we need to hear things over and over and over again, and each time we hear it, we're in a different place. So that's my list of 40 things that I consider that heart-centered love is about. If you want a copy of it, email me. It's jim@jimbrownspeaker.com. And now we have about 20 minutes until I close. So let's see if I can whiz through the 20 things I have about what love isn't. Okay, what love is or does not do. All the things we've talked about have an antidote, like forgiving or holding a grudge or being angry. Understand that we'll all do some of these things some of the time. So the goal is to recognize when we're out of balance or out of integrity as quickly as possible and develop a way to come back into that place of heart-centered love. I used to get angry for a week. Now, as I'm getting angry, I can say, I don't want to go there. Do I still get angry? Yeah. But going from a week to recognizing it when it happens is an enormous path and distance that I've come. Am I perfect? Nope. My mom was the only perfect one, she told me. Okay, here we go. When we are doing the following things, which are things that I don't consider to be heart-centered, you know, what heart-centered love is, it's what it isn't. What we're doing is we're asking for love. So here's the list of how we ask for love. First of all, we criticize. Most of us, I'm going to say criticize and judge. Those are the first two. Most of us criticize and judge ourselves more harshly than anybody else could criticize us or judge us. I read a book by Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your Life. And she said, if I ask you to do one thing, it would be to stop judging. So stop judging each other. Stop criticizing each other. We're not perfect. None of us are. Never have been. We aren't, and we never will be. That's the nature of us being human beings. It's all about learning how to love. We're kids in school. We're learning how to do this. So criticizing ourselves, like criticizing myself for unmuting it, well, what good does that do? I can't undo it. It's done. It's over. Let's move on. Let's stay focused. Let's do what we can do. Controlling other people. I don't know what we need to say about that. We know we do that, and we don't have the right to do it. It's just be aware of it and say, hey, I don't own that person. I don't have a right to control them. And love them enough to let them be who they are. Pardon me. Getting angry, we talked about that. And just think of yourself when you get angry or upset or frustrated that you look at a two-year-old having a temper tantrum. And ask or tell the person you love what you would like them to do when you get upset. Because I know all I want to do is be hugged and said, okay, it's okay, honey. And let's let it go. Because it's kind of like by hugging me and holding me, it's draining that toxic energy right out of my body. And that's what I need to have happen. I don't know about you. Same thing with frustration. And I get frustrated with Rosemary a lot because I think that she should see life the way I do. And I have expectations for how she should handle me or a situation. Isn't that good? So as Dr. Phil says, how's that working for you? Not very well. Doesn't work very well. And it isn't worth it. Like I told you, in the last month we've been to two funerals. And I know that one day one of us is going to be saying goodbye to the other one. So all I want is to enjoy every single day that I have. And I got to let go of this stuff. And you do too. We talked about rigid expectations. Yeah, having rigid expectations is just going to create unhappiness for you and whoever it is that you're having these expectations with or for. We talked about withholding, not withholding love. Next one is abusive. Don't be abusive physically, verbally, or emotionally. Physically, we know all about that. Verbally, sometimes that happens without us even realizing that it's happened. So we got to let that go. We don't have a right to destroy another person. And we destroy people by the things we say and the things we do. We just don't have that right. All that is saying, hey, I need to be loved. Then say it. Say, hey, I need to be loved. I'm feeling neglected now. Help me. I saw this last week in domestic violence where there's a handgun in the house. Women are 500 times more likely to be murdered. Can you believe that? And everything we hear is that guns are there for defense. 500 times. Unbelievable. Needless to say, I don't believe in guns. I've never had a gun. I don't shoot a gun. I don't believe in them. I don't, you know, and if you take opposition to me, that's fine. That's your point of view. I was talking to my brother Tom, who was a foot soldier in Vietnam. He says, I don't believe in guns. He says, the problem with a gun, now he was a foot soldier in the front line. He said, when you have that gun, you got to be willing to kill that person. And my whole life is focused on, hey, I want to become more godlike because I know that all of us are aspects of our divine creator. Whether we say we're God in human form or however we say it, I don't want to get into that because different religions get kind of funny about that thing, so I don't want to get into that kind of thing. but I want to see and learning and looking to see the divinity in everybody else. And by having a gun, I'm saying, hey, I'm afraid. And I want to just put out love, put the energy of love out, because my point of view is that that wavelength that I put out is all that can come back. And all I want to do is learn how to love, be more loving, be more accepting, be more tolerant, and believe that that's what's going to come back to me. Next thing I have here is trying to change somebody. Now, I don't get upset here, ladies. I think women have a tendency to be more like that when it comes to a man, and they're going to get married, and they can change him, and then he'll be better. That doesn't work. You don't have the right to do that. You are entitled to be yourself, and you let the other person be the other person. Let them and their creator deal with their issues. You brought them into your life as your teacher. What did you want to teach them? You change your attitude toward them, and they will change. It's a mathematical equation. A plus B equals C. You become more loving, you become more accepting, you become more tolerant, you become all the things we talked about, and they're going to change. Next thing is, and we're halfway through the not-to-do list, is to be manipulative and try and enforce our agenda on someone else. And people try to manipulate other people all the time, and I don't think that works. And it doesn't serve your highest good. It doesn't serve the highest good of the people that you're dealing with. Next is getting annoyed. That doesn't work either. And I do this a lot, and it's just kind of childish, getting annoyed because you didn't say or do what I wanted you to say or do. Here's another one. Constantly making excuses, which is just being on the defensive. And nobody's perfect. So what? Why make an excuse? You did it. You're wrong. And again, you know, I still see Susan in the chat room. What is it? Linnell used to say, you make a mess, clean up your mess. We all make messes. Clean up our messes. We're all human beings. We're all sticky. We're all yucky. We all have stuff. Okay? We all have stuff. Get it? Every one of us has stuff. So when we screw up, clean it up. And don't be afraid to say, hey, I was wrong. When I was 39 years old, I was assistant hospital administrator. And my boss came to me and he said, Jim, on your tombstone it's going to be written, he was always right. I went, whoa, is that hot or what? Having no idea that he was I can never remember the word, not criticizing me, but I was being counseled. Because it's no fun to work with or live with somebody who's always right. And it's so much lighter and so much easier to just say, okay, I was wrong. I don't know. I don't understand. I'm trying. I'm a work of art in progress, and I keep working on it, and I'm trying. Stubbornness. Stubbornness is another way of saying I got to be right, and being right is more important than being happy. And most of us, not all of us, most of us would say it's more important to be happy than it is to be right. Think about that. Would you rather be right, or would you rather be happy? And I'm going to say that for the most part, most of you listening, if not all of you listening, are going to say you'd rather be happy. So be happy. Give up having it your way. Give up being stubborn. It isn't important. Being egotistical is not a good way to have a loving relationship. It's not about me. It's about us. It's about who we are. It's about what's going on. How do we take care of this? How do we work together? What do you want? How can I make your life easier, more fulfilling? Next one, which is 15, is being negative. We know that doesn't work. Just doesn't work. My mom was like that, and she was afraid of everything, and everything was, oh, what happens if this happens? What happens if that happens? This is all about negativity is another form of fear, and I can't do this, and what am I going to do, and that type of thing. So it doesn't serve you, and it doesn't serve anybody else. So let go of the negativity. It's like, oh, well, what if this happens? It's worrying about something before it happens doesn't serve anybody. So let it go. Be positive. You know, it's better to break your arm patting yourself on the back than it is to break your leg kicking yourself on the bottom. You remember Muhammad Ali. He said, I'm the greatest. Well, why don't you say that? I'm the greatest. Aren't I wonderful? Yes. Okay, the next one is finding fault. That doesn't work. That's just saying, I'm no good and I'm going to find every fault in them with you. Again, we want to let all that go. We don't want to be looking for finding fault. Remember we said earlier, on the positive side of this, it's look for what you love in a person. Find what you love. Enjoy that. Next one is nagging. Rosemary has a tendency to nag. I don't know if I do, but we can ask her. I'll have her on sometime. And I hate being nagged. You tell me something, I'll do it. But don't tell me 30 seconds or a minute later to do it a second time. I mean, tell me a second time. This one here I've said several times, and that is being right, and it's better to be happy than to be right. And I'll reiterate that again, it's much better if we're wanting to be happy than having to be right. And the last one I have here, I guess I thought I had 20, I only have 19, is shutting the door when somebody else is sharing their most intimate fear. You know, when someone is opening up to you, then be there. You have to be able to shift gears because things happen quickly and we get in our own little world and we don't shift gears quickly enough to accommodate another person. So be there and say, hey, you want to share that? And you're there for them. For me, my biggest fear, as you, I'm sure, have figured out by now, is losing Rosemary. And that is absolutely, I wouldn't say terrifies me, but I already feel like that's the agreement that we made, that she would be the one to leave first. And I know that I have enough people who love me in my life who will help me take care of that when the day comes, if that day comes. My dream would be that we died together in, you know, whatever, an earthquake, car crash, whatever it happens to be. When the Costa Concordia went down a little over a year ago, I thought, oh, that's the way I want to go. We've been on 45 cruises, be on a cruise ship like that. That would have been perfect. Okay, so we have gotten through the entire list. I was surprised. We got through the negative ones a whole lot faster than the positive ones, which I think is good. And what I want to do then is next week, last week we were talking about self-forgiveness, and what I wanted to do this week was to do forgiving other people and not realizing that this is Valentine's Day week and the show is called Heart-Centered Loving. So I want to do the heart-centered, wanted to do what we do today. So next week I want to go on forgiving other people, and that'll begin us along the path of relationship with other people. So next week's program will be 60 minutes again, and it will be on forgiveness, and there will be a guided meditation next week. And for those of you who listened to last week's show and you want the guided meditation separately, if you want to send me an email at jim@jimbrownspeaker.com, I have the guided meditation separately on my desktop, and I'll just send it to you as an MP3. And if you're interested in my books or having me come to speak to your group or being a life coach, again, my website is jimbrownspeaker.com. You know the W thing. I don't have to go over that. So next Tuesday is February 19th. The show will be from 2 to 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to close differently today than I ordinarily close. And the way I'm going to do that is what I usually do is have a closing story, then a closing quote, and then I have my farewell comment to you. But what I'm going to do is do the closing quote, my comment, and then I'm going to share a story of love with you. And at the conclusion of that story, I'm simply going to play some music, and then we'll fade. And I won't. When I finish the story, we'll go into the music, and then the show will be over. So I'd like to thank you for joining me today and sticking with me all this time. And the quote I have, our closing quote for the day, is by William Perkey. And it is, you got to dance like there's nobody watching. You have to love like you'll never be hurt. Sing like there's nobody listening. And live like it's heaven on earth. And my farewell statement to you, which is usually at the end, but today it's going to be one before this story, and that is that I send you love from my heart to your heart, and I wish each and every one of you that this Thursday, February 14th, is the best Valentine's Day you've ever had in your life. And when your heart is open, and when you give your heart, and when you give your love, I promise that this will be. So here's the story that we're going to close with, and it's called The Rain. It was a busy morning, about 8:30, when an elderly gentleman in his 80s arrived to have stitches removed from his thumb. He said he was in a hurry as he had an appointment at 9 o'clock. I took his vital signs and had him take a seat, knowing that it would be over an hour before somebody would be able to see him. I saw him looking at his watch and decided, since I was not busy with another patient, I would evaluate his wound. On exam, it was well healed, so I talked to one of the doctors, got the needed supplies to remove his sutures and redress his wound. While taking care of his wound, I asked him if he had another doctor's appointment this morning, as he was in such a hurry. The gentleman told me no, that he needed to go to the nursing home to eat breakfast with his wife. I inquired as to her health. He told me that she had been there for a while and that she was a victim of Alzheimer's disease. As we talked, I asked if she would be upset if he was a bit late. He replied, "She no longer knows who I am, and she has not recognized me in 5 years now." I was surprised, and I asked him, "And you still go every morning, even though she doesn't know who you are?" He smiled as he patted my hand and said, "She doesn't know me, but I still know who she is." I had to hold back my tears. As he left, I had goosebumps on my arm, and I thought, this is the kind of love I want in my life. True love is neither physical nor romantic. True love is an acceptance of all that is, has been, will be, and will not be.